Well, good evening, everyone. Hope you're all well, as I always say. Tonight's show. Hey, what if I told you? We've got an ex-Olympic coach. Oh, yeah. And don't forget you're listening to... Oh, yeah, people. Oh, yeah. Yeah, on tonight's show, I'm going to be talking to Andy Britton. He's a former coach of the Olympic team, and he's responsible for a couple of medal winners. So, yeah, these are the kind of people I bump into. We met at Costa Coffee in Tamworth. Not very glamorous, but anyway. Whatever you're doing, sit back, relax. Don't forget my Friday show, 7 to 8, Radio Warwickshire. It's all country. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Hey, good evening. Good evening, people. Well, it's evening to you. It's not evening to us. It's mid-afternoon. I'm in Tamworth. It's thrown it down. I've come over to meet someone today to do, obviously, an interview for you to listen to. I'm always seeking interesting guests. So what if I told you that I had, sat opposite me, a coach who's coached Olympians? I mean, that's bonkers, isn't it? So that's where I am. I'm in Tamworth. I'm in Costa Coffee. And I'm with the one, the only, the man, the mystery, the coach of the coaches, Andy Britton. Good evening, mate.
Morning, mate. Well, evening when it's going out, it's morning to me. good, mate. I'm really good.
Well, thanks for doing the interview. I really appreciate it. And we met a couple of months ago, and I was really intrigued by your story, because obviously it was networking, and you gave your 40-second pitch of who you are, and I thought, oh, he sounds like an interesting fella. I need to interview him. So for the people out there who don't know who you are, and obviously I do, give them a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you've been doing, etc.
For my background, I'm Andy Britton, and I was your typical kid who got into athletics, which is my area of specialism. Through school sports, yeah. I did all right at the school sports day, and it came as a hell of a shock to me, to be honest. It was the last thing I expected to be, because I was like, not great at much at school.
Right.
And it was typical where, we've got a gap in the team, it's school sports day, you go and do this. And just to keep the peace, I went and did it.
Yeah.
And I went and did the long jump, and I won the damn thing. And I thought, well, what the hell did that happen?
Mm.
And then from there, I had a mate who was also a decent sprinter. He won the 200 metres at the sports day, and off we went to our first athletics club together, and that was about the age of 14.
Yeah.
And having got there and done a little bit of training, I quickly realised that I wasn't going to be any good as a long jumper, because I was getting in competitions and getting my backside kicked week in, week out by people who were good.
Yeah.
But there was a guy there who was a throws coach, shot and discus coach, hammer coach, coached the whole spectrum. And he came over to me and he said, you'd be a cracking discus thrower. And I thought, you're mad. You know, because I was this tall, skinny kid, and I thought discus throwers would be like water buffaloes.
And obviously it doesn't work on radio, but Andy's quite a tall chap. How tall are you?
6'7".
6'7". He's enormous. Look like a little larger than Mr. Bates. Sorry to interject.
No problem. So this guy explained it all to me, how, you know, what the skill set required was to be a discus thrower. And he'd got a squad of athletes who were doing all right. They were winning titles, and they were doing representative stuff for the Midlands and Midland schools and all this kind of stuff. So I thought, well, he obviously knows what he's talking about. He's having some success. If they can do it, I wonder if I can.
Yeah.
So that was my sort of first step up, really. I started doing all right. I worked hard. And I started winning some titles and doing some representative stuff. And that was how I sort of progressed to the level that I was capable of in athletics. But it became pretty evident quickly that I wasn't going to be good enough to be an Olympian or a world. It just simply wasn't good enough. You know, you've either got that natural skill set or you ain't. Yeah. And unfortunately, I didn't have it.
Yeah, and I think that if I can just add something to that, what I'm trying to do with the show and the dyslexic thing, not everybody's going to be Richard Branson or, you know, the height of success. But if you can get to the level, and know what your level is and be comfortable with, that's great. Not everyone. This is where I think a lot of people get frustrated, because everyone expects, well, if I put the effort in, I'm going to become the next Usain Bolt. I'm going to be, and it's
it doesn't work like that.
There's genetics and there's training. Yeah. So anyway, carry on.
The people who reach that kind of level, you know, the Usain Bolts of this world, are incredibly special individuals before they even set foot on a track or in a gym or wherever else.
Yeah.
They have a skill set that you can't teach.
Yeah,
and I use the analogy of, if I take a cart horse and give it to a racehorse trainer, right? What will come out is a stronger, faster cart horse.
Yeah.
But you'll never get a Derby winner.
No.
That's a, and it's the same with human beings, which sounds a little bit harsh, but you've got to have this special skill set. They are incredibly gifted, special individuals before you even start doing anything with them.
Yeah.
That's the difference. So for me, I realised that I couldn't be good enough, but I worked hard and I got to be the best that I could be. And I had some good success and I won a few medals and British level. Never good enough to go any further than that. Now, when my old body wore out when I was 36, I thought, well, what do I do now? You know, because all I'd done all my entire life was, you know, be involved in sport. And I thought, well, I can't do that anymore. So what do I do? And after a few months of thinking, I thought, well, I wasn't good enough to get there myself. Can I coach people to get there?
Yeah.
Am I good enough to do it from that angle? So that's when I started really my development as a coach. And I was really lucky at the time because there was a guy who just got a job within British Athletics called Sean Pickering, who I'd known for a few years. And he got the job of event group lead for heavy throws.
Yeah.
And I got in touch with Sean. I said, look, Sean, I wanted to be the best that I can be as a coach. Can you help me? What can you do to help me? Unfortunately, he was like brilliant with me. And he sort of got me up to Loughborough, and I was spending time at the High Performance Centre around all the best, you know, athletes and coaches that we'd got, doing my, you know, learning my trade really. And the great thing about Sean was he's got this worldwide network of contacts. So he would bring people in, people coming from Sweden and Germany and New Zealand and America. Yeah. All the best coaches in the world were coming into Loughborough, and I was like this sponge for these guys, you know. Teach me, I want to know. And they were bringing their athletes with them. So I was hanging out with like the current Olympic champion, the current world champion, shot put and discus, and you know, and that's where I did my best learning. You know, I was doing all my qualifications, all my coaching courses, but I thought my best learning I ever did was just be around the guys who were actually doing it and actually had been there.
Well, that makes sense, because textbook stuff's great, but then you've got to apply into it. It's like you can take someone to a classroom to teach them how to swim, put them in a pool, they'll probably drown. You know,
absolutely.
You've got to apply that technique and that learning in real life situation. Otherwise, it's a waste of time, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. I mean, and I was really lucky. There's one guy that came across, a guy called Vestin Hafsteinsson, who was an Icelandic guy, who at the time was coaching the Olympic champion. He was coaching the world champion, a guy called Gerd Kanter from Estonia. And Viesti and I first met probably about December of 2007, when Gerd had won in probably about August.
Yeah.
And Viesti and I sort of got to know each other quite well. And sort of one day I sort of said to him, I thought, well, I've got to go for this. If I'm going to do this to the best of my ability, I've got to sort of get out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I kind of kidnapped him, and, you know, I said, look, and I looked him straight in the eye, probably as far away from him now as you and I, and I went, I want to do what you do.
Yeah.
And I thought, he's either going to think I'm completely crackers, or he's going to go for it. Fortunately for me, he went for it. And that was sort of the beginning of me moving up to that next level.
Yeah.
Because I was around these guys, and I was sort of sharing video and stuff. We'd sort of send video to him of people I was working with. He'd critique it and send it back.
Oh, that's a good idea. Another pair of eyes.
Yeah, and we got to a point where he was then sending me stuff of his guys that I could look at. And like, I'm under a bit of pressure now. So, but that was what I needed to sort of drag me up to that level.
Yeah,
you
because that athlete who he's sending you is probably at a higher level anyway.
Absolutely.
So that minute, that incremental improvement takes a lot to see, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah. And the other thing is that the stuff that he was sending me, he already knew the answer. So he was saying, what do you think of this?
So you either get it right
or you don't get it right. And that was everything that was coming through was like a little bit of an exam every time, which was great.
And
I was loving that.
You.
Yeah, and I was loving that. So, you know, fortunately, we got round to London 2012.
Oh.
And by that time, I'd sort of got a job in professional sport. I was the National Event Group Lead for Throws with Welsh Athletics. So I had nationwide responsibility for the development and performance of all the throwing events for the whole of Wales.
Yeah.
That also led into doing stuff with British Athletics.
Yeah.
So I was involved in the build-up to London 2012.
Yeah.
You know, I was involved with Gerd Kanter by then, was a defending champion from Beijing. So I had a little bit of involvement in his preparation for defending his title in London, which is great to be around. And it turned out there were six athletes in London for whom I was either the first line coach or worked as a consultant. Two of them came away with medals.
Yeah.
So by that time I was like, I've got where I want to be. You know, I'm doing this professionally, I'm doing it for a living, I'm travelling the world, I'm working with some of the best athletes in the world. Life is good.
I mean, it's great. I mean, because obviously the coach, when you think about it, obviously people see the the athletes winning the golds, and everyone, I can obviously have empathy with them that, wow, that must feel amazing. But I should imagine for the coach, it's just as important and an important buzz, because you've seen that person develop, grow, mature, improve, to actually for them to get on the podium and take a whatever medal it is, gold, you know, gold, bronze or silver. Must be. How's that make you feel?
It's unbelievable, because it's kind of thing that you see, like you say yourself, you see on TV, and you think, to some extent, that's something that happens to other people. It doesn't happen to, you know, it doesn't happen to me. But even at kind of regional, local, British level, to have that happen, you know, I never lost the buzz for that. Even though you've worked at the sort of the real sharp end, when you start with a new kid who's got some talent and they get their first medal at like a, you know, a county championship, you still feel the same.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you still feel, but for me, it was never about me. It was never about me being famous. I didn't want to be famous.
Yeah,
I wanted to make them famous. So, you know, by the time you've sort of had your last throw, you've won whatever medal you've won, I'm probably sitting in the back of the stand eating the sandwich. It's your time now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Keep me out of it. You know, I've done my bit. You get on the top of the podium. You have your photograph taken. You do the interviews. You do the lap of honour with the flag. I don't want to know. It's your time.
You're not like me then, because I've been nudging the person as I'm taking a bite of my sandwich, because saying, that's one of mine.
The thing is, if you've been up since like 5:30 in the morning, you've done like qualifying rounds, and then he's like, the last thing you want to do is like, I'm done now, mate. You know, if you need me to show you the way to the top of the podium, I ain't done a very good job, have I? So that was my attitude to that. You know, you go be famous. I don't want to be.
That's great. That.
I don't
really
want to be.
Really
good. And that's the way I think now. You know, I'm not here to be famous. I'm here to help others to achieve what they want to achieve.
Yeah.
That's just my nature.
Yeah.
It's just my nature.
That's wonderful. So obviously you've moved on from that since 2012 and the Olympics and everything, because you're not involved in that.
Unfortunately you're not. It's just one of those things. I mean, after 2012, 2013 was a great year, probably an even better year, because I was lead throws coach at the World Championships in Moscow. I was lead throws coach at the World Youth Championships in Donetsk in the Ukraine, which is now a war zone, by the way, which has nothing to do with me. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a war there. It's just Andy was here.
Yeah, Vienna. So that was a great year. I had a guy that year who was ranked 8th in the world, the 8th longest throw in the world, you know. So that was a really, really good year for me. But then unfortunately, as was the nature of professional sport, at the end of 2014, they have one of these wonderful things called restructures.
Oh, yeah. Cost-cutting.
You know, and if the head performance coach decides that your event group isn't going to get many medals, you kind of get left out. And that's unfortunately what happened to me.
It's terrible, isn't it? Because some of the sport, I'm not a big sports fan, but I know there's some sports there that have been dropped, and you think, why is that not in the Olympics? They've dropped it, or we've not entered because we're not going to think, we should be entering, should be, even if we don't win, taking part is part of it as well, isn't it? But everything, business, charities, you know, sport, it's all based around money, and the same as business. And hey, that brings us to a good point, because that brings us to a business point where, you know, everything revolves around cash and making a profit and being better than everybody else. So, obviously, that's, for me, it's great you've been involved in that, and obviously you've got some marvellous achievements there. But I presume then you can use those skills and abilities and apply them elsewhere, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Coaching. Absolutely.
Because coaching is coaching. Yeah.
I mean, what I'm doing now is I've started a business as a success coach.
Yeah.
And it's a much broader spectrum than just working with throwers in athletics.
Yeah.
Okay? Because this skill set that I've developed over the years and that I've used in other, you know, in other industries that I've worked in, without really knowing that I was doing it, to be honest, it just comes naturally. When I managed with local authorities, for example, every team member that I had in that local authority team came out with a qualification, either an NVQ in their job, management qualifications, that kind of thing. So it's something I've always done.
Yeah.
So now I'm doing it as a professional success coach.
Yeah.
So one of the aspects is, again, with the sporting side of things, is coach the coach.
Yeah.
Because as I alluded to earlier, the best coaching development that I did was outside of the formal governing body qualifications.
Yeah.
When I worked with the best people in the world who were at that sharp end, you know, that kind of informal, just being around guys. And I learned a huge amount from that. So what I do, one of the things that I do is I'll work with coaches from any sport, and I will go and I'll watch them coach, and I'll look at their session plan, and we'll discuss their session plan, what they want to get out of it, what they're trying to achieve,
yeah.
And then I'll help them, and I'll critique. I don't like the word, it sounds like I'm criticising, really not.
No, no.
But I'm just sort of watching, observing their session, and I'll make a few notes based on, you know, what they're telling me and what they're trying to achieve, and that helps them to develop as coaches. And I can do that across all sports because it's so transferable.
Yeah.
It's so transferable. So that's one aspect of what I'm doing now. So I've still got that connection with sport. Another angle that I'm looking at is something that I'm calling bucket list ambitions.
Oh, cool, yeah. Because right? We've all got bucket lists, haven't we?
Absolutely, you know. And what will happen is people will get to, like, well, I'm 40 next year, or I'm 50 next year.
Yeah.
I want to do something to celebrate that milestone. I might want to climb Kilimanjaro or walk the Grand Canyon.
Or do a 5K.
Or do anything, you know. I mean, you know, this is how I think, you know.
Yeah, you're thinking big. There's people out there thinking, I'd like to do a marathon. Yeah. How do I start that? I mean,
really?
Because that's mega, isn't it, marathon?
What I find is that the physical side of things, getting in shape to do that without being too flippant, is the easy part of it.
Yeah.
What will determine your success or failure in that endeavour is what goes on between your ears.
And that's true at everything in life.
If you think you can, you can. Yeah. If you think you can't, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer in that. So you get somebody say, you know, coming up to their 50th birthday, says, oh, I want to climb Kilimanjaro. It's very likely that all your friends and your family are going to go, oh, you're stupid, you're crackers. Why don't you just go down the pub and have a meal? you're too old, you ain't fit enough.
I love it.
You know, and they'll do that.
Yeah.
Well, that's where people like me step in.
Yeah.
Because I've got a can-do attitude. I believe if you want to do it,
yeah,
and you plan it properly, and you do the work, and you apply the right mindset, you can do it. And that's where people like me come in.
Yeah.
So bucket list ambitions is another aspect of
the
business.
Yeah, because I've got one as well. I've got one of my things that I'm going to be doing. I don't know how long it's going to take me to do it, but is I'm going to be in an RV with a dyslexic superhero on the side of it, with two Harley Davidsons driving across the state, education on dyslexia and encouraging.
Love it.
So that's my bucket ambition. And I'm on it. But absolutely. I know it's going to happen. People probably think I'm absolutely bonkers. Yeah. But you know what? I'm going to do it. And that's why I wanted to talk to you, because it's exactly the sort of thing people need to hear that are a bit, I meet loads of people, you know. Yeah. And it's a common theme thread with a lot of people I've interviewed. I interviewed someone the other week, Emma Roach, and she went around the world doing a tour.
Yeah, I've met Emma, I love Emma.
Yeah, and she was told, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And she said, watch me, and she wrote a book.
Yeah.
And that's the same people. Because, unfortunately, I've said it before, what happens is people love you too much and they don't want you to fail. So they're doing it for the right reasons, but it's the outcome's wrong, because they prevent you from going and doing that thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, in some ways, they're trying to be nice in a way, but I think they're trying to save you from yourself.
Yeah.
You know? They're trying to save you from the disappointment. But why should there be a disappointment?
Well,
there's no reason there should be disappointment.
It doesn't matter, does it? You know? The last thing you want to be doing, and this is getting a bit morbid now, you don't want to be lay on your deathbed, whenever that is, going, oh, I wish I'd have done that. I wish I'd have done that. Do you?
No.
You don't want to have any
regrets. The worst you can do. You know, it's better to have a memory than a dream, I always say.
Yeah.
I've always said that. You know, have a crack at it. What's the worst thing that can happen?
Well,
if you work with me, the worst thing doesn't happen, because I always get you there, because I know how to do it.
But even if someone tries an attempt, say, the London Marathon, and gets three quarters way around and jacks in, they probably won't, because, you know what I mean, like you say, but they've had a go, haven't they?
Absolutely.
They've had a go.
You know, and what have you learnt about yourself on that journey?
Yeah.
You know, you've learnt that, you know, I don't have to be, you know, this out of shape guy who smokes and drinks. I can, if I apply myself properly, do the right things and get the right support, achieve what I want to achieve, or better myself.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you see it.
Yeah, it's good.
So everybody can do that, you know. And the tagline that I use is, it's life without limits.
Well, I like that.
It is absolutely life.
You need that as a t-shirt.
Well, this is all part of the planning. I've been having meetings like this all week. You know, so, but it is, you've got to try and develop this life without limits attitude.
I love that.
You know.
That's what the title of this is going to be, Life Without Limits.
It is, you know, and I'm sort of, you know, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I'm perfect. I've had some real mega down times in my life, you know. I mean, when sport waved goodbye to me, I mean, I was sort of massively depressed. I hardly left the house for like 3 months. I was really, really down. But
now I got the t-shirt.
Yeah, you know, you eventually you find a way out, and sort of getting involved in networking, as you know, what I'm doing now with the organisation I'm involved in, there's been a massive help. I've met some brilliant people who've really given me some great ideas, and that's how I've come to be, you know, getting the success coaching business off the ground.
Well, and this is what I try. I did a talk the other week, and what I was saying was one of the biggest things that helped my development in my corporate career was moving away from my where I live. There's nothing wrong with where I live, but I had the same group of friends, the same structure, and pretty much I was getting the same results.
Yeah.
But then I went and lived in and worked in Holland for a year, and I met a different group of people who were more senior, giving me more opportunities. So you're right, what you need to do is get yourself away, get yourself into a different... If you want different results, you need to do something different.
Yeah.
So go and get a coach like yourself or whatever. Get into another... Think differently, get around other people, like you're networking now. You're in and around a group of people that are all in the same mindset, because we're all business owners. We all know how you think. We're not your parents or your family or your mates down the pub saying, well, I wouldn't do that, because they're not in the same mindset. They're not in the same headspace.
It's another angle. I mean, yeah, without being flippant, I always say, if you want to drive a Lamborghini, don't take advice from a guy who rides a push bike.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, who are the successful people? Where do I want to be? Who is doing what I want to do?
Yeah.
Let's find these people. Where are they in the world? Because they might not be in, you know, they might not be in Birmingham. You know, I mean, my guy was in Sweden.
So, yeah, you're right. Go and find... So I've been seeking out people like me. Might say mindset. Might be doing something totally different. But when I look at them, they go, oh, yeah, they're on the same track track. So guess what? They become my peer group.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a guy in Australia I talked to, Tony Jack the Bear. He's a digital remasters music. Got totally nothing to do with what in some respects. But... if you put us in the room together and we have a talk, we're both on the same path. We're both trying to do the same thing.
Absolutely.
It's bonkers.
Absolutely. There's a classic quote that I heard from a guy who was a reformed heroin addict.
Yeah.
And he said, he was interviewed, somebody interviewed him, and they said, well, how did you do it? And he said, well, quite simply, really, I changed the people I was hanging out with. And he came out with this brilliant quote. He said, I guarantee if you go to the barbers every day, sooner or later you'll get your hair cut. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you hang out with heroin addicts every day, sooner or later, you'll have a little dabble.
Yeah, you will, because it becomes normal, doesn't it?
It becomes a norm.
It becomes
Their reality becomes your reality. I think I saw something recently that said, you become the sum part of the five people that you hang out with most.
Yeah.
So choose your circle carefully, would be my advice.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Choose your circle carefully. And the other thing is that when it comes to something that I learned from sport, as I was sort of starting my journey as a coach developing, it was all kind of British people having an input to British people. That's not being offensive, but the problem with that is that their limitations can become your limitations. So you need to broaden your horizons. You know, if you haven't got anybody, you know, if you want to coach world and Olympic champions, you need to find people who've coached world and Olympic champions.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
They know how to do it. They know what they've had to go through.
Yeah.
Whereas if you haven't got that.
Yeah,
available to you.
See, I think going back to you finishing in athletics, I think, and obviously it affected you, that's their loss and everybody else's gain. Because if you'd have stayed in that... So, for example, someone's listening now, there might be somewhere, you know, locally, who wants to do something. You'd have never been able to work with them because you were busy doing your thing.
So, absolutely.
So their loss and what that downside for you has opened up the opportunities for yourself and other people to go, do you know what, I'd like to do that. Who could have go? I'll tell you what. It's no better than there's worse choices than picking two mental champions.
Well, the bottom line for me is that I'm a really honest guy, right?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is what I do for a living, so you know, it's what I do professionally. There's a cost implication. Let's not kid anybody about that, right? But the thing is, if I sit down with you and we have like a half an hour chat, you know, to try and establish what you want, etc., etc., if I don't think I'm the guy for you, I will tell you there and then that I'm not the guy for you, and I will try and signpost you to somewhere that is more appropriate.
Yeah,
I'm not going to rip anybody off, you know. Yeah. I'm not going to pretend that I am the answer to everything, but I am damn good at what I do, and I've proved it at the highest level.
What you've done, the achievements and where you are, and what you're doing now, I think it's great. And what I really like with people that are me, and you're a classic one, is... You know, you've had success, you've had real downturn, but you've actually then, because of your nature and your beliefs inside, come back up and gone, do you know what? And you've got self-belief and you've taken it back and you've brought yourself back up. And I think that's... Take the medals away.
Yeah.
That in itself is brilliant.
I mean, for me, it's just like, I want to be in a position where I feel like I'm good at something again.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm working towards that now, and I've got a clear path towards that again. So it's, you know,
I know when I met you and I kept calling you coach, didn't I? Because I'm a bit of a piss taker, but I wasn't taking a piss. No. I wasn't. It's like, well, you're a coach, so I'll call you coach, and I think you were a bit taken aback by it, and they're going, oh, actually, I've not been called that for a while.
Yeah.
It was like
3 years ago somebody called me that.
But yeah. So it's, but that's what happens, isn't it? It is,
you know. I mean, yeah, I'm never going to sort of lose that. I mean, that's on my CV for time immemorial. It's not going to go anywhere. So I thought, you know, after a sort of while, you start. It's just been around, like you say, different people who sort of plant these little ideas in your head. I mean, you sort of made one little comment, and that sort of, you know, switched the light bulb on. And then I've been around other people who've said other things, and it's all just now, the last sort of month or so, started to come together.
And it doesn't always come clear. People will be frustrated. I was getting frustrated because I had mine's like took me quite a few years. I had an idea of what I wanted to do back in 2010. Didn't know how to do it or what I was even going to do. And it's like, and then a couple of people said a few things to me, and it just one day it was like, that's the answer.
Yeah.
And that's what you're getting. Yeah, so with people out there thinking, I want to do something, I've got this idea, but I'm not. And they'll be frustrated thinking, oh, it's a bit stupid. But just keep thinking about it and just keep going back to it, because one day you'll be in the shower or driving the car and going, wow, that's the answer. That's it. That's what we need to do.
That's it. And another thing that I really want to sort of emphasise is that, you know, you don't need to be a genius to do this stuff. Right now, I am part of the pitch that I do when I speak at like networking events. Right, I call it one of the four sites that I do is called from the top of the world to the depths of despair and back.
Oh yeah,
which is basically this story.
Sounds like your story. Right? Yeah.
But the other angle of it is how does a poorly educated kid from the back streets of a small town in the Black Country get to coach at world level? Because that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
You know,
the first one sounds bad.
Yeah. Well, it does, but that's, you know, that's the, you know, that's, I take the gloss off it, and that's what it is. You know, and I've got no A levels, no degree. I left school as a 16-year-old with 7 really dodgy CSEs, as they were back in the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember.
And the next couple of days, I was back in Bockies in the factory.
Yeah, I know. I know. So, and it's great, and that's it. From humble beginnings, and we'll have to start wrapping up soon.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I firmly believe those sort of instances, like yourself and like where I've come from and other people have come from, and then you take that to a sporting connotation. When you look at some of the world class runners and the distance runners, they've come from places where they probably don't even have any shoes.
Well,
And it's that drive, they've got that fire inside to do something, haven't they?
Well, a lot of the African kids, they learn to run because if you're late for school, you get a good hiding.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Haile Gebrselassie was like one of the world, you know, the world's sort of, I think he's still world record for 10,000 metres. If you notice when he runs with one arm that looks like he's holding his school books, which is what he was doing. Seriously?
Yeah.
He had one arm like this because he ran to school with his school books under his arm.
Excellent.
And everybody, look, you've got this dodgy arm action. Well, yeah, but if I dropped my books,
yeah, I'm in trouble.
I was late for school. I've got a good hiding in Ethiopia, you know.
This is where keeping
it's great
it.
Stuff,
so,
it?
Andy, it's been wonderful to talk to you. And these shows just zoom past without, you know, a blink of an eye.
Absolutely.
So if people want to climb Kilimanjaro, run the London Marathon, or even be a better golfer or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Where do they get hold of you?
Well, at the moment, I'm in the process of developing a new website for the company, so I can't give you that yet.
Yeah.
But email address is fortitudeglobal@aol.com.
Yeah.
Or you can get me on a mobile, which is 07984-651-583.
Cool. So what I'll do, if you give me the, when you up and running, I'll add it to the show notes when it goes onto iTunes and stuff. So people will be able to get it for them.
But fantastic,
it's been wonderful to be sat with you, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you achieve in the next coming 12 months or so.
Wonderful.
So,
looking forward to it yourself, mate.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Super, Kirk. Thank you, mate.
Cheers. Well, that was Andy Britton. Thanks for being on the show, mate. Really appreciate your time. And it was great chatting with you, and I hope that's inspired a few people out there. So, yeah, Olympic coaches on the Dougie Stone Show. Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for tuning in. If you're on iTunes, please subscribe. If you're listening live on Radio Warwickshire, then please check out the website, radiowarwickshire.com. There's lots about us on there. If you're a band and you want to submit your MP3s, go to the submission tab on radiowarwickshire.com, drop us a line and we'll play your music. I'm hoping to have Chasing Deers on their band in London from the Midlands. So hoping to have them on the next couple of weeks. So whatever you're doing, be safe, people. See you same time next week. See ya! The Dougie Stone Show.